Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Here on WMR.FM. It's the 6th of December, 2024. It's Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. And it is an incredibly busy news week. Quick programming note, the show is being recorded live to podcast one day later than usual because it's the beginning of the last quarter of 2024. And I don't know about you, Christine, but my consultancy is overloaded right now with reports. It's reporting season. I got to write reports. It's just report after report after report after report.
Mine's a little different because I'm doing a lot of auditing, but I am writing report after report after report. It's just audit reports.
It's, the cool thing is we're past Cyber Monday. We're past Black Friday. There's still a couple more shipping days until Christmas, I guess, because drop shipping is almost perfected now in the drop shipping era. But for SEOs, especially in the e-commerce world, there's not a lot left that we can do for our clients in advance of Christmas, right?
No, although we talk about this every week right now, and that is, it is a perfect time to audit your site and get prepped for the new year, so that when you have after New Year's celebrations, you can hit the ground running with fixes and changes and get that first update lift for the Google roll about March or April.
A lot of companies set their budgets, their annual budgets in January, and a lot of them go into budget setting almost flying blind because they don't know exactly what they're facing, what they're going to have to deal with, and issues that are either going to be coming up in a couple months or a little bit down the road. So yeah, this is a really good time to do an audit. If only for a little bit of peace of mind when you go into budget setting season, so you actually know what you're setting your budgets around.
Well, there's truth to that because there's not just regular site health audits, but there's content audits and there's, on-page audits and conversion audits. There's all sorts of auditing you can do. So when you hit the, like you said, the budget, Terry, when you're making the budget for the year, ran out of words there. When you're making the budget for the year, that you'll have an idea of where you need to focus those resources. So do you need to focus it on technical or content or social or ads or whatever it happens to be? If you're just going on what you did last year, you may be putting your money in the wrong place. I totally agree.
I can say without a shadow of a doubt, having been in the nascent, 3, maybe 4 month old AI is kind of putting out a search engine product era. Technical SEO, technical proficiency, crawlability, these are incredibly important aspects of getting your website, I don't know, even noticed and recognized by AI crawlers. Christine, you and I've talked a million times about the amount of electricity, the energy, the nuclear power station level of power it takes to generate and to run to run AI systems. Crawl budget is a very real thing in the world of AI crawlers. It just, so many resources are going into just creating the AI generated responses. For good, for ill, we'll see what happens over the next, however long. There was an interview just before we went to air. You shared this interview with me from the New York Times. Google CEO Sundar Pichai basically saying 2025 is going to be the year of incredible change, and it's not the kind of change where we're going back to 2015, Google was a useful machine.
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, you saw that article today. What, where was he going with that?
I think he's going with a lot more AI, but the truth is, I don't see that that's improved Google at all. So more power to him. But Google and in the world outside of Google and our, and even our industry, people aren't liking it these days. They're finding it very difficult to find things. They don't like the overwhelming amount of things on the page. So I don't know. I don't think he's been a good CEO. So we'll see what happens. He's just made a lot of money by making search worse. We know that from the DOJ docs. And merging things like ads into continuous scroll and constantly hiding where they are so people click on them. But we'll see. I don't know. You probably have a different opinion, but I really don't think most of what he's done with AI has really been beneficial for Google.
I don't think it matters whether I think it's beneficial or not. And I don't think it matters whether I think it's good for the search world or not. I don't think they care. They don't care.
Well,
they're going ahead with this. My job is to do the best I can for my clients.
No, that's true, too. I mean, I know how it works. I know what to do with it. I'm just saying, you asked me my opinion on what he said, and I'm saying that I don't think it's a good direction.
Well, again, I don't know if it's a good direction or a bad direction. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it just looks like Google, well, it feels like Google's being pushed around by its competitors. It's trying to keep up with the Joneses. Is Gemini going to be substantially different?
Not from what I've seen from the researchers in AI, because I follow those on LinkedIn. They found Gemini to actually be kind of lacking. They were kind of really excited for it, like you were. And they know more than I do, of course, because they're the researchers, but they just found it was not really anything game changing when it came out. So I think probably that's what Sundar is talking about. We also know they're going to do things like make personalized search results based on AI blocks. Again, we have a story later today, which probably explains why it exists, this new thing about getting out of or doing personalized search and getting out of it. But anyway, no, I don't think they're keeping up with the Joneses. I do think they did originate all the tech. And as we talked about originally when this happened, ChatGPT, you know, Altman threw that into the universe. Google was trying to do it the adult way, you know, slow and methodical. Bing saw an opportunity. Microsoft saw an opportunity, jumped on it. Because they're kind of the, you know, small guy in the room and they can do that. They can pivot more quickly. And so Google's just been catching up to what's going on in those other areas where it probably had its own plan to begin with and was on track for that. And they haven't pivoted well because they're a massive company.
A wave of change is coming beyond the changes that we've already seen, if Pichai's interview with the New York Times today is to be believed. We'll see what happens with that. One thing I guess that's changed in the last 24 hours is yesterday, the Google November 2024 core update rollout, it's completed. It took 24 days, and it ended sometime yesterday around noon, 1 o'clock Eastern time. What does this mean? The December one is about to roll out?
Probably. No, usually they take a break in December because so many people take vacations, long vacations. Yeah, they usually go down to skeleton crew at the end of the month, middle of the month. So the rollout's complete. I have to say, Jim, I have one point of contention with Google. And that is they always tell people on a core update, you didn't necessarily do anything. Your site doesn't have issues. Some people just did better. If people did better than you, then they had a better site than you, according to Google. I've recovered core updates since they came out in 2018, and they're always recoverable, and there is always something wrong with your site, and it almost does always large technical issues. Not always, because it can be any of the core ranking signals, but it's usually large technical issues. And you can find out by checking at the keyword level. That's where they apply the devaluations. So keyword groupings. So if you have like the same keyword in a two word or five word or a three word keyword shingle, go with that root keyword or set of keywords and check there to see if those pages lost the most. And generally they have. And then you can check there for what your issues might be on those pages. But all I've ever done, I have four core update recoveries in the last 2 months, and all of them were technical. That's all we fixed was technical issues.
Well, I mean, for people out there who need to do it themselves because they can't afford to hire an SEO, what part of the website were you looking at when you found technical issues? So when I think of a core update, devaluing a site, I usually think site-wide rather than individual pages in the site. And if it's technical, you'd think that would cover the whole site, right?
Well, technical does cover the whole site, but the devaluation, because they're done on your money, your life sites, and Google has no way to know if a site is your money, your life. And that's according to Gary Ish. They do it at the keyword level because they know a keyword is your money, your life. So if you go to your cardiologist and you want to get something for your heart, they know heart is going to be a your money, your life term, right? When it's related to medical topics. So they apply it at that keyword level. It usually is very massive. It's usually an 80 to 90% drop because it's a keyword shingle. So I'm not saying the one keyword is the problem. It's like maybe one of the root keywords that's responsible for 100 pages on your site. So it does look like it is site-wide, but it won't be on every page on the site. Like the HCU, when it drops a site, it drops every page on the site. If you look in Search Console before and after, you'll see every page drop somehow. In a core update, you'll see only some of the pages drop or a majority of the pages drop. They're usually related to a couple of sets of keywords. And then you can check those pages for large technical issues because it's almost a very obvious large technical issue. It even been on the site for a very long time. I think the core update is Google's cleanup crew. They're the street sweepers in the middle of the night that come by and pick up all the little bits, right? So they check your site and they find that it's got issues that are requiring them to use a lot of resources, which is money to them. And they run the core update. That is my guess on how it works. That is not something Google has said, but that was just my guess from having worked with them for so long.
Okay. Moving forward, the TikTok ban was upheld by a federal appeals court late yesterday. I guess the ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, is going to have to divest at least is going to divest itself from TikTok. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit unanimously sided with the Justice Department in declining to review the petition. So review a petition for relief away from the legislation, away from the ban. So yeah, it looks like TikTok has 90 days to get it together.
Yeah, the crux of the case was, did they have standing to file? And they did. I do know from just personal going to DEF CON and listening to people who do cognitive warfare and actually know a lot of the details about TikTok, that the basis that it is a weapon of China is pretty valid. These are researchers that worked with the Pentagon and Department of Defense. I asked them directly. So it's going to go forward. You know, when it first happened, the very first time it was mentioned, and I'm on TikTok and people were furious. Like they were so mad and they were going to, you know, not vote for Democrats and all this stuff. But TikTok is so arbitrary with how it bans people. Most people that are on there that have any substantial following have other accounts on every other social network, plus like 5 or 10 accounts on TikTok every time they get banned. So you're not allowed to say a lot of things on TikTok. You have to use special words. You have a special language. So I don't know that the people are going to be that furious about it, to be honest. They're not going to be happy, but I think they're kind of over TikTok's arbitrary nature of how it does things, and they're not going to really have the uproar that we did before. I could be wrong, but we'll see. But yeah, they do have till the 19th. They could try to ignore it and see if the new president does anything differently, and so they might, but that person also changes with the wind. So it might be better for them to try to do something before the changes of administrations.
TikTok has been not officially banned for use by Canadians in Canada, but it's absolutely been banned from any government computer.
Yeah.
And recently the Canadian government issued a warning to Canadian users of TikTok that their information is almost certainly compromised. Beware what you say and what you put, and even what you're writing in conjunction with TikTok. It's very likely looking at your files, again, according to the Canadian government, and apparently the U.S. Justice Department as well.
Yeah, and there's even a thing this weekend, and this is not on the story grid, so if you don't know about it, don't worry, I'm not going to go on very long. But China has gotten a backdoor into U.S. telecom. Mm-hmm. And so they're advising people use Signal or WhatsApp to communicate between Android and Apple devices. So if I'm sending a text message to a friend who has an Apple device, I have an Android, they want us to use Signal or WhatsApp because apparently the backdoor is quite fast and they can get in and get your information. So we know China already does this. So the idea that they'd be using TikTok for this really isn't that out of the realm of definite possibility.
For what it's worth, you know, the biggest nation state that spies on its own citizens and other citizens as well. It's under the Patriot Act, it's actually United States. So for what it's worth, all the stuff you put online is being looked at anyway, but in this case, it's being looked at by the Chinese government that has sometimes been quite hostile towards democracy and voter intention and stuff. But everyone's doing this to everybody. That's the problem I have with stories like this. Everyone's doing it to everybody.
I don't want to normalize it, though. There is a lot of spying that goes on, for sure. But this is a bit different. You know, this is invasive to the point of every citizen is at risk. Generally, nation states go after people they target or people they think are of interest. Or looking for things. But anyway, the U.S. definitely has a bad history with that, of course.
Okay, this next story is kind of scary. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but a well-known, I guess I'll call him arms trader, named Palmer Luckey has, AI has been incorporated into drones and into remote control devices, remote control military devices. But Palmer Luckey has, I guess, signed a deal with OpenAI to integrate it into some of his lines of unmanned weaponry. So appearing on a battlefield near you much sooner than you might think.
Yeah, so you knew this name. I did not. Palmer Luckey's company is called Anduril. Is that how you say it? Anduril? A-N-D-U-R-I-L. Just so people know that this would not be new. Unfortunately, there's an Ars Technica article from about 3 years ago, where we were using unmanned drones with the ability to just kill people based on facial recognition. So if they're this was between Pakistan and India, the corridor there where a lot of the terrorists are located. They were actually allowed to unalive people based on that facial recognition without intervention by a human. We already have a bad history for this. But yes, this would be using models, by the way, models which inherently are wrong often. Like, it's not a thing. Maybe they'll be wrong. It's a thing that's part of what they are. It's part of their base. It's part of their core. So that's one of the big, of course, reasons not to use this. Like, oh, sorry, didn't mean to kill those people because the large language model was wrong. But this is very disturbing because drones have a lethality and the ability to get into spaces where militaries can't. You know, you can shoot your Stinger missile, and you know it's going to hit a target, but you could chase somebody down with a drone, and that's a different thing. So this is very concerning, especially because OpenAI was supposed to never do military contracts.
When it comes down to it, war is desperation for survival. It's unthinkable that AI would not be used in weaponry, given the people who are using the weaponry. You know, of course they're going to use it. Whether it's good or bad is, you know, that's something we can debate all day long, but they're still going to do it. It's just one of those things. It's a terrifying new reality we live in, but very real space.
It is.
Something a little more cheery. What do you think? You've been there for a couple of weeks now. What do you think of the blue sky?
Oh, I thought we were going to move to the other story. Blue sky is good. It's got some issues, but they seem to be quick on fixing them. And I just mean minor things. Like, I have a bunch of people who follow me from Twitter. Like there's 600 or something, and I have to go through them one by one and click into each one to add them. So they need like a way to mass follow people back. You don't have like a easy follow back button, but they're getting better. Like I saw today, if I roll over a person's profile name, it'll show me information about that person before I had to click into it. So I give them time to catch up, but overall it's good. It's a much cleaner space. It's not a fast enough space yet. A lot of times my feeds are from a day ago and I have 1,000 or so followers and I follow about 700 people. So I should get more than I do. But we'll see how it goes. I do think it's the thing closest to Twitter, and there's the starter packs, and starter packs are great. And then, people make those themselves in the SEO industry. There's a whole bunch of them, different starter packs. And then also Blue Sky has starter packs you can go with, like for art and photography and authors and all sorts of things out of the mainstream of news. So I think it's got a good vibe to it. So we'll see. It is hard to thread though. We have this mega thread in the SEO industry that has been running for years. If you went back to it on Twitter, you literally would find like thousands and thousands and thousands of posts originating from one post. And the threading there seems a little more difficult to follow. So we'll see if they get better on that.
Yeah.
The new mega thread is not hung together. It's like a bunch of spaghetti instead of a straight line.
So Blue Sky only has 24 million users. I can't even estimate what how many users were at Twixter or X at its peak. And how many are remain there? And I think it's what 300 and some odd million.
Yeah,
so it was 380 million at its peak and 350 million now.
Yeah, the thing is, we also don't know how many of those are bots and fake accounts. Like, I get attacked.
That's true.
Daily, and we know that just back in 2018, MIT discovered a bot army. I think it was out of Russia that had over a million bots. Some were sleepers, some were active. So we really don't know how many of those numbers are real. But yeah, the good thing though about Blue Sky is, yes, it's 24 million, but it was only 9 million in September.
Yeah. Oh, indeed. And you know, the growth is incredible. And it must actually, growth is worrisome because growth brings, you know, small town grows into big city, suddenly has big city problems. Same thing with technology. If you go from several hundred thousand users to, you know, tens of million users in a couple of months, your scalability is going to be challenged at the very least. And a whole bunch of other things that you didn't even dream of as necessary are now necessary.
And they are talking about adding ads. They did say that yesterday. So we'll see. But
which is so sad because Jay Graber just talked to Wired Magazine, CEO of Blue Sky, just talked to Wired Magazine and promised to not enshittify it.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I love that word. It's my favorite word this year, enshittification. If it's not in the dictionary, I hope it makes it this year.
It is. And actually, it is in the dictionary.
Did it get added last year? So I did see two reports. I did see where she said she's thinking about ads, but the other report said she more likely will go with a subscription model that will allow you to do things like add minutes of video. Right now, you can only do 60 seconds. So adding positive features that people want to pay for. I always hate when you're saying big city problems, you get like something new and it gets popular and then they're like, now we're going to charge you for the basic features. And that just makes people mad. But if you're charging for positive features, things people want, but you don't have to pay to use the platform properly, like you can upload ads. I mean, upload video, just only a minute. So you pay and then you get like 5 minutes. So I think the subscription model would be their best bet anyway. So let's hope that's what they do instead of ads, because the ads just lead to the incentivification. Yes, I love that.
Thank you, Cory Doctorow, for yet another extraordinary word.
I didn't know that's where it came from, but I do love that word.
Yeah, Cory, Torontonian Cory Doctorow, wrote one of the original blueprints for how the internet would work, the Clue Train Manifesto. And again, in 2023-24, came up with the word enshittification to describe how the results of said manifesto, the end result of the of how it turned out, enshittification.
Oh, I gotcha. I did not know that.
Okay.
Before I move to that, I was going to say, speaking of enshittification, my favorite story of the week, just because I've said it enough, I just like to jump to this first before I move off to Bing, is that Verge has written an article, Stop Using Generative AI as a Search Engine. And they outline all these issues with things that were wrong this past couple weeks in the generative AI. So the generative AI, the interesting thing is they use a search engine to pull in the links that they collect from. So if you're using like ChatGPT, you're getting Bing anyway. If you use Gemini, you're getting Google anyway, AI overviews. But anyway, it was wrong on a whole bunch of things related to, like, these are real newscasters that actually said these things, like Neil Bush was George Bush Pardon's son, but that's not a thing. And they called somebody the Butts. I can't find where it was. But anyway, it was some a pardon that was given to somebody that doesn't exist with the last name Debuts. So just be careful when you use generative AI engines, because they're using search from an actual search engine, which you could go to, but you often get wrong information because it is a generative AI model, and those are often incorrect. So they just make up stuff that goes in there.
Okay, well, speaking of just making up stuff, if your SEO company gives you specific reporting for ChatGPT and says they extracted the data from Bing Webmaster Tools, they're just making stuff up. Bing Webmaster Tools will show you search data for Bing and Yahoo search, but apparently not for OpenAI's ChatGPT search feature. In fact, there's outside of, I think, SEMrush shows information for OpenAI's ChatGPT, but it's outside of that. What you're getting in Google Analytics is spotty, but they're showing information that I don't entirely trust. Outside of that, I'm not sure where you get information about appearances, links, or even just mentions in generative AI results.
Yeah, there's some tools that claim that they can report on this, and I'm not saying they can't. I just haven't looked at them enough to know for sure if their reporting is accurate. But I'm not really sure why they can't, because it uses its own demarcations that are unique to the GPT. We know that which property was it at Condé Nast that they were being hit, you know, thousands of times a day by ChatGPT, I believe was the bot, or maybe it was Claude. So they know that the bots have user agents. They know how to track those. So I don't know why they're not reporting on this, except maybe that the report systems are really difficult to change programmatically. And so it's going to be a while, but hopefully they'll have that data soon enough. So we know, you know, when that's an issue and when it's not. So it's something we have to pay attention to, and when we don't.
There is a regex expression out there that's being passed around SEO communities that lets you check the appearance of AI agents, coming to check out your site, coming to spider you or crawl you. But I have yet to see anything that says relatively exactly how many times you show up in AI Overview or Perplexity or in Search GPT results. And I'm not sure how exactly they would do that. I mean, I think they could say when your links showed up, but I don't know what they could say if they could say when your content showed up.
No, that's true. And knowing that people clicked on it and went to that content. Yeah, I'm sure there's a way to track it, though. I mean, they can track down to, you know, heat mapping. They can track where you scrolled on the page. But it just may be too cumbersome, or maybe they don't want to invest in it until they know it's a real thing. You know, not getting that many searches coming from these generative agents yet.
If you do see on one of the many reports that SEOs are writing now that it's December, end of fourth quarter, and it says on that report, this is what Bing Webmaster Tools tells us about ChatGPT, it probably shouldn't be there.
No, it definitely shouldn't be there. Nobody's reporting on that just yet.
But if you are on Bing and you want to see only results from a specific domain, you can now do that, which is actually really cool. Thank you. Thank you, Bing Search. This is appreciated.
Oh, my gosh. This is so much better than Google, too. Have you ever done this? You search for something that has a brand name in it? Mm-hmm. You're just trying to find information, and all you get are the domain name pages. It happens all the time to me. I'll put in a brand. I may be just looking like, when did Nike start or something, right? And I'll get Nike. Not like any pages that actually answer my question, because the brand name is in there. So this is such a better way, because if you want the results only from the brand, you can select it. But most of the time, I'm not looking for results only from the brand, unless I just put the brand name in to find the homepage to click on it. As you know, I don't want to put, I'm too lazy to write .com on the name of the brand. So this is such a better method, I think. Do you get that? Do you get that in Canada, where you get like only the site name when you search for a brand information?
Yeah, absolutely, all the time. I still use Boolean search to push my way around the search engine, but that's really cumbersome and really hard to do. Most search users don't do that.
No, I don't even do that.
push of a button, Bing letting us see only what's at that domain, which incidentally is a good way to count how many pages they got in their index.
Oh,
quite
that's a good
helpful.
point. I didn't think about since we're having problems with that from Google now. That's a great idea.
Now, just because it's in Bing's index doesn't mean it's in Google's index.
No, but I'm talking if we're looking to see how many pages we think the site has outside of having to be in Google. I do a site crawl and it shows 500 pages and I know that site's bigger and site colon doesn't give me page numbers anymore. I could go to Bing and look at that. That's a good idea.
Where are we going next?
Well, you want to talk about Wix? They got some cool stuff going on when we're talking, since we're talking about results and
Well, we
measuring
should.
traction.
Wix Studio is actually one of our sponsors, so we absolutely
Yeah.
should talk about Wix. They'd
Yes.
appreciate that, no doubt.
They probably would, even though we do not get told to talk or not talk about them.
No. Just quick disclosure, they are a sponsor of ours. They have never told us what to cover.
Exactly, 100%.
But this time we're
So,
going to cover them because they did something cool. Really
they
cool.
did.
Thanks,
They did do
Wix.
something really cool. So, I don't know this company, but they've integrated TWIPLA session recording toolkit, which looks like, some weird tech number, but it's actually a company. It's a German website analytics company and announced the native integration of their session recording toolkit directly into Wix Analytics Report. This is from Roger Munty at Search Engine Journal. So it's really interesting. They're going to give deeper insights into customer behavior, for user experience optimization and help you like basically help follow the journey that the user is taking throughout your site. So I think this is really nice. When Wix first came out, it was just sort of like a blog type platform years ago, right? It's just like small little thing, but now they're becoming a real competitor in the space at a time when we know from our previous shows that WordPress isn't doing so good. So I think this is a great addition to have these automatic analytics. They also do an automatic check for accessibility in there. You
Good.
can run an accessibility check and they'll fix those things for you. It's not a deep accessibility check, but it's a good basic one. So anyway, what do you think, Jim? I think it's probably a really nice
I think it's
addition.
excellent, and I'm really pleased to see the emergence of a number of different website builders and content management systems. On one side, the ease of interoperability and the what's the right word standardization that came with WordPress, I thought was excellent and really beneficial to the web as a whole. But what's happening with WordPress now and Mullenweg's behavior over the last 6 months, actually behavior over the last couple of years, is chilling. So
Yeah.
if there's only one predominant platform, then those people are being held hostage by somebody who's doing crazy things right now. And that's not stable. I mean, it may well be stable forever, but you don't know that. He could decide to pull the plug tomorrow. He's done crazier stuff.
Yeah.
So having Wix out there, having Duda out there, I think it's really cool. And what I'm liking is I kind of see Wix and Duda pushing each other to improve, because I think they're each other's natural competition.
Yeah, very true. That is very true.
So,
I
oh, sorry.
go ahead.
Well, if Wix is putting out a toolkit, great. I bet you Duda's going to react, and I bet you Duda will make Wix react to something they're doing. That would
Yes.
be excellent.
What's nice too is this is at the session level, so you can actually just see how someone interacted with your pages. Like, is that button working? You actually see a video of how the user was interacting. I don't know how to say the company though. That'll be my at Twipla? Twipla, is that right?
Twipla.
Well,
If
if it's said in
you
German, it'd be Twipla.
TWIPLA. I think
Yeah,
it's an
but in German,
acronym
W
for
is a V.
Twipla.
But the W in German is a V, so I don't know how to say it. Twibla?
TWIPLA. TWIPLA. Like any German
Oh,
would. You say it TWIPLA.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
I have no idea.
I don't either. We'll have to find out. But I think that's a great addition to Wix. So, and they are really easy for people to use that don't have the money to pay for like developers and coders or like a bigger experience. And they have a lot of great templates that are already built in for you to use to start with.
Okay. So Google Search is introducing a sort of a new pilot program, mostly I think because people have become incredibly lazy or demanding with the use of their time, depending on how you want to look at it. So Google Search's YouTube summary pilot is quick takeaways and key takeaways. Basically, what's going to happen is there's going to be a new video search carousel based that's going to appear and populate based on your search queries. And using AI, Google's going to create like text and image summaries of the video, letting you glance at what you could be watching faster to decide if you actually want to be watching it or not.
I don't know. We'll see.
I think that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, I don't know how this is going to help, but we'll see. Because like the descriptions were nice and short and sweet. These key takeaways are like a couple paragraphs long, plus the pros and cons. It's a lot to read before you click on a video. Like I can go click on the video and decide in 5 seconds if I want to watch and read the description below. So we'll see. It's a lot of text.
I remember a recent time resenting video when text would have done the job faster.
Oh, I still do. I don't have time most of the time to listen to video. So if you give me a text option or a video option, 9 times out of 10, I am going to listen to, I'm going to read the text. If it's a big thing, if it's just like I'm scrolling and I'm just bored or need some company while I'm doing the dishes or something, then I listen to a lot of videos. But I do that mostly on TikTok, not Google. So we'll see.
A quick hint to listeners, if you aren't communicating with Christine, she tends to listen to the loudest emails. Write them in all caps. I'm sorry. She doesn't. Don't write her emails in all caps. That's not very nice.
I especially love it when you tell me you see my website and you want to help me with it because I don't have a website. So anyway, people cannot see this. Obviously, Tim and I can. But if you go to Google Search YouTube Summary Pilot on SE Roundtable, you'll see the images of it. It's a very long, it takes up an entire screen on your phone to read it. It's a lot. So we'll see. I think it's probably better to let just people click and decide for actual traffic and engagement. I have a feeling this will deter people from actually engaging with these videos, but we'll see.
I think the key word here is pilot. This is a pilot program. They're testing it out. They're seeing if it works. If it doesn't work, thing with pilots is they crash into the ground and people forget that they ever existed.
There's a whole website dedicated to things Google's killed. So,
okay, so are you looking for love on Google? If you are, you need to be certified. At least that's what Google thinks. Google's launching a new dating companionship ads policy, and advertisers are going to need to secure certification because Google's going to be enforcing stricter rules around dating and companionship ads starting in March 2025.
Yeah, and your policy includes not allowing underage dating promotion, compensated companionship, dating or sexual acts, exploitive or deceptive dating services, mail order spouse services, misleading imagery or text that doesn't match the audience being marketed to. Restricted categories include hookup, fling, or swinger sites, affair dating or infidelity services, sexual fetish dating, live stream or chat apps featuring nudity or suggestive content, racy imagery and ads are on landing pages such as lingerie. There's lingerie. There's whole sites where women buy lingerie or partial nudity. So anyways, you want to make sure that you do follow these because they will be pretty strict on giving you the hard slap if you don't.
Well, okay, so there's so many people got to get certified.
Yeah.
Where?
You know, the article doesn't say, and I just picked up on that when we started talking about it today, because there is a certification process for businesses. I don't think it's the same thing, because that's like involves them actually coming to your business. This would not be that. So I think they're talking about Google ad certifications, but I don't know what those are. And the article doesn't say, so so I think we're just going to have to guess here or just let people go look it up themselves.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't explain what certifications are.
Well, again, if you're looking for love on Google, you're looking for love from Google, you ought to be certified.
Yeah. By the way, it's the advertiser has to complete the certification process.
Not the user.
Yeah, or the business, just the advertiser.
Okay, this one I thought was really interesting. This is pure geek out SEO, and I think it started with SEO theory and has actually turned into, oh my god, this actually could happen. So In a search off the record, Google explains how content, duplicate content black holes can form and be caused by error pages. So Google search team member Alan Scott, in the last Search Off the Record podcast, talks about marauding black holes, something that you're going to love writing into your reports. And I can't wait to put the fear of marauding black holes into my clients. And how this works is, think of error pages on your website, eh? You could have two or three different error pages if you have two or three different sections of your website. They might look a little bit different for each section. But the error page probably looks a lot like a less sparsely populated page in your website. Well, your custom error page probably is skinned the same way your website is skinned. It looks like a regular web page. It just has the error message and such, and hopefully helpful navigation to get the user where they got to get to. But, like, you know how Google is now grouping pages for evaluation, like especially like Core Web Vitals or something? In that grouping process, Google sometimes looks at the error page and will group in with those error pages sparsely populated regular pages that actually should be in the index. Google's not going to rank your error pages. It's going to de-index them, in fact. That's what it wants, and it should do that. Your error page should never rank in a Google search. But since Google's grouping pages into, like, I guess, buckets for evaluation, sometimes good pages get grouped in with ones that legitimately should be de-indexed, causing a duplicate content black hole.
Yeah, and the problem is Google will never crawl these pages again.
Yeah, once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, so if you have something that got swept up in this, and I'm not really sure the best way to determine that other than looking at your pages in the Google Search Console that have, would it be in the de-index? What would it be? It'd probably be in the 404 section. You'd have to probably rename the page, recreate it, because you're not going to get it out of this black hole. Once it's in the black hole, it can't be removed. It will not be removed, and they will not do anything to it. The way that Matt Southern, who wrote the article on Search Engine Journal, says that you can help avoid it is to make sure you're using the right status codes, like a 404, a 403, and 503s are all different, but you don't want your error pages to come up with a 200, which says an okay status.
Yeah.
And only pages marked as a 200 okay may be grouped together. So if you're grouping your error pages into your regular pages with that OK 200, Google may hit the error page and then group all your pages together and not do anything with them. Create a new unique content for your custom error pages. So when you use Sitebulb, it actually tells you if your 404 pages are showing like custom unique content or not, and if they're similar. So you want to make sure that you do custom error pages. Make sure they don't have the 200 OK status. And then caution, be careful with the no index tags, because if you put those on error pages, unless you want them permanently removed from search results, this tag will indicate that you want the pages removed. So that can further your issues with good pages that get caught up in this black hole. So
I can't, honest to goodness, can't wait to start writing about marauding black holes in my reports to clients. And you know what? I don't see myself. I've never come across this problem.
I haven't, but I haven't known to look for it. So, you know, those pages that get crawled and not indexed, I'm wondering if that, I don't know that that could be part of the reporting in Google Search Console, but I'm wondering if it could be. Because you have all these good pages that are just sitting there and they're like, they don't, you can't seem to get them indexed, right? They've been crawled and they're not going anywhere.
They're in there for a number of reasons.
There are.
That's actually somewhere you want to be looking with your technical audit, right? Because there's probably some crawlability issues on those pages.
There definitely can be. The crawl not index has a lot of possibilities for why they're in that dump of pages. I'm just wondering if this could be one of the sets of pages. It also
Very well could be.
Yeah, and also sounds like they might be using the compression algorithm, which we haven't gone into in depth here, but Roger Monte wrote about on Search Engine Journal. And that's where they take a bunch of pages and they compress them down to the like simplest points. And then they look to see if they're the same. And then they group them together. So it could sound like it's part of this process. We don't know that it is, but It definitely could be part. So just make sure that your error pages are unique, throwing the right status codes, and that they don't look similar to other pages on your site.
So, Google Gemini is testing new and improved link sources. Google is, well, I guess Google is just tired of having the reputation of scraping all your content and taking all your clicks and not giving you much back for it. Well, maybe they are, maybe they're not. That's just me hoping that they are, but I don't think they really are. But anyway, Google is trying to make your links, publishers' links, more visible in AI answer engines. And it's Gemini and AI overviews. The new feature is going to place the sources and related content header at the bottom of a page with an explanation about the links beside it. And clicking on that will list every website that Google has used as a source. Now, this means that the user will actually have to click on a link to see that you were used as a source. It's not going to automatically show for them. But it gets it. It's a link that couldn't get the can get the user to the original sources of the data that's being used in AI overviews or in the generative response. I'm not sure how useful it's going to be. Like, I'm not, only researchers are going to click on it, eh?
I think pretty much. There's also something that I haven't had time to delve into, but Glenn Gobby posted from Gemini Advanced. You can see all sources and related content to a typical kind of search, particular kind of search. I'm not using Gemini Advanced, so I'll have to dig into that more. But it's interesting. I think they just, because they also have the down arrows, and now they have the boxes at the bottom. It's a lot.
So I really dig sources. I mean, I remember back to my days of school. Sources are everything. That leads you to new areas of research, which, you know, greatly enhances the paper you were trying to write. I'm really unsure. I mean, we had to, when we had to cite our sources, we didn't have to put them behind a link. We had to, like, you know, cite them in very specific ways in pages at the end of the document we'd written. Quite as make them as accessible as possible. And I don't think Google's doing that in this case.
No, here what they are doing, and I just found what Glenn was referring to. The new feature and user experience is places the sources and related content header at the bottom of the page, in addition to what we just talked about, with an expansion caret next to it, and tapping that will list every website Gemini.
Yeah, so you gotta click that link if you want to see the sources. So this is not just displayed for you.
And it's not like a couple of sources. It's quite extensive. So I guess it'll show if your site was one of the ones that it used. Because the other thing we found out through the research of things like SEO Clarity is that these tend to shift around quite a bit. They don't. It's not a steady thing like a top 10 or you know, a carousel. These are always shifting.
Incidentally, just by creating this button, Google has said straight up, we can tell you when your content appeared in AIO.
That's true. You're right. It could.
So that could be measured.
They're just not reporting it.
That's right. We're just not.
By the way, we still don't have a user agent report for Discover. And how long has that been out? That just gets dumped in Google Analytics in a bucket on its own, like into the general bucket.
We did have one at one time, didn't we? I remember a Discovery a button.
They're supposed to do one, but they never did it. So.
They never did. Well, that's weird. That's weird.
Or if they did, it was very, very brief. So, yeah. So, I guess, you know, if they haven't done that yet, we might be waiting a while for them to do it here. But you're right. They have listed the sources, so they do know the sources that are listed. That would be a good GSC report when you showed up in an AI overview source, you know, source content, even if they can't tell you the clicks or anything.
This next one is interesting. Google Chrome has a way to see, a way to, like, I can view my own engagement metrics for sites I visit, or only Google can see it. We know that Google Chrome has a way of seeing the site engagements, the original URL, base scores, bonus score, total score. Do I have access to this, Christine, or is it just for Google?
Yeah, this is kind of funny. First of all, it's been around since 2016, so it's not new. It's just something people, I think, are newly discovering. I ran across this somewhere, and I don't know where, and I included it in a report. And then I was going to come back and, like, ask people on social if they'd seen it before, and I forgot to. So it's very interesting. It gives you information about the pages that I'm engaged with and has little odd columns like base, bonus, total. I don't know what all those mean. But the site engagement metrics are pretty interesting, and they will tell you how your site's been interacted with.
How do we get to them?
Oh, you would ask me that.
I'm sorry. It doesn't say on screen. It's the first thing. How the hell do I get to this?
And that's what I mean. I ran across it totally by accident, and then I couldn't find it again, and I couldn't remember where I went to get to it. Dejan.ai, he has a whole post about how to find it, what it means, what's in here, what the metrics are, how they're defined. So that's a really good one to check out. So just look up Dejan, Dejan, site engagement metrics, and it's Dejan.ai. That's his website. He's a well-known European SEO who's very, very good. So he gives a very detailed list of how all this works.
Yeah. Okay. So Google has added a button at the bottom of search results that will tell you if your results are personalized or not. And if you don't want personalized results, give you the option of, depersonalizing the results.
Yeah, I find that very interesting, especially because the item we covered above. Why they're letting people depersonalize? Like, if they're going to do these pages where they do the AI to, like, to set your page, that's all based on personalization, right? So is this their get out of jail card free if people don't like it?
This is Google.
I mean, it's really only not, what.
But guys, you know what? I'm not thinking they're doing what I'm positive they're doing. They're looking for feedback on personalization, and they want to see how many times people choose to depersonalize the results. And when they find out that people are just too lazy to click this button, they're going to say personalized results are amazing. People love them.
Yeah, exactly. SEO is, if you've done the PWS equals zero parameter to the query, that's the same thing. It takes the personalization out. Mine are all depersonalized because I can't have that when I'm researching for clients, especially when I'm doing site health checks. Can't have my personalized results showing up. So mine are always depersonalized, but I'd be willing to try this just to see what it does. So it will be interesting, but it will be at the bottom of the page and you can just depersonalize, which means you just get straight up Google results, which I actually prefer, to be honest. But it's not new. Just people are discovering it and Google highlighted it. And it's not been highlighted before.
So here's a neat thing that we learned. Caches the last rendering of a site. It could cache the rendering for up to 30 days. Basically to help preserve the site's crawl budget for other crawl tasks. This is coming from Gary Eyes and Martin Split in a office hours, or an, I'm sorry, in an off the record. That's kind of neat, eh? They hold on to your web render service cache for 30 days, or more or less. Gary E's warned that it may be a little more, maybe a little less, no hard, maybe 30 mightn't be the hard number, but 30 is the close approximate.
Yeah, interesting too. The quote from Google, written definitely from a developer, does say that they have their talks about a crawl budget. So crawling the resources needed to render a page will chip away from the crawl budget of the host name, i.e. your site, hosting the resource. To ameliorate this, WRS attempts to cache every resource, JavaScript and CSS, referenced in the page it renders. The time to live of the WRS cache is unaffected by HTTP caching directives, like, you know, you cache set to 10 days. Instead, WRS caches everything for 30 days, which helps preserve the site's crawl budget for other crawl tasks. I think that's the first time Google ever has definitely admitted to a crawl budget.
Well, I mean, just recently, didn't Google say crawl budget? Well, technically, yeah, but don't worry about it.
Well, it is true. Like I said, I had a site that Google found 2 billion pages through a faceted nav leak, and it got crawled every day, multiple times a day. So, But also, that Gary said, he was debating the 30 days for some time, and he was afraid it'll create another round of 15 megabyte confusion. I'm assuming that's what people thought the crawl budget was.
No, but it also one time Gary said that Google will only crawl 15 megabytes of a website and then stop, which is not true. And by the way, most websites – oh, actually, that was true, except most websites will never be that big.
Oh, no. No, that's not true. That's not true
no,
anymore.
No, most websites will never be that big. Some of them will.
I've done a lot of auditing this year. My average web page is 2 megabytes. Average, I don't care what the site is. WordPress, tiny, tiny site, e-commerce site. I have most of them coming in around 8 to 15 megabytes. It's insane. So they probably had to get rid of that, get like 2 pages of the site and it'd be done. So that's just very interesting. Also may change in the future. And it doesn't apply to XHR post requests, according to Martin Split.
Then and I thought that was kind of interesting too. You can still push Googlebot around, but you mightn't be having the effect you think you're having.
Exactly.
Okay, so Google has added a reporting feature in Google Maps to report business conduct, hoping that people basically drop the dime on businesses that are offering incentives in exchange for reviews, or pressuring people to leave a review.
You know what this reminds me of? Way back in the day, only OG SEOs would probably remember, is that Matt Cutts used to go to conferences with his little black book, and you could go to Matt and say, hey, Matt, you should check out this website, because they do things they're not supposed to, and then Matt would check out that website. So this is kind of the same thing, where you can report people for a business contact, i.e. paying for reviews, as Jim just said. It's a form that you go to. If you go to SE Roundtable, Google Maps ads, report business contact to report review manipulation, the article, you'll have a link to the form there. And it's a very basic form that you also add your email to. So be careful if you're just reporting people for the sake of reporting them. So.
Yeah, Google will take a dim view if you're just screwing with people. But if a business is illegitimately pushing review for service, that's a problem and it should be reported.
Yeah, and this form was just added within the last couple of weeks. Very checked on the Wayback Machine. It was very new.
So here's a neat question, sort of a thought question for SEOs out there. If Google's going to apply a manual penalty to a site, should it warn that site ahead of time, or should it just go ahead and do it?
I don't know that it helps to warn them ahead of time. We've already made the determination that the site is bad, spammy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get out of it, but maybe if they tell them when they do it, I guess if they notice right ahead, they could mitigate maybe with monies or something, how they're spending to hold off while they fix everything. But I don't think they're not going to give you
If they do that, then Google is leaving a craptastic site in the search results just so that they don't lose money. It's giving its users a poor experience when somebody else did something wrong.
Years ago, and I still do this, but years ago I had confirmation that they did this. They contact big brands and tell them that they're in trouble, that they might receive a manual action or devaluation. You might want to fix this. Very, very big brands. And the reason they do that, of course, is if you went to the search engine and you couldn't find, Microsoft in there, you'd probably think Google is a really terrible search engine. So it's not really for the benefit of the site. It's more for the benefit of Google. But John's statement to this was, that's a good and hard question. Generally, I'm in favor, but it's challenging. If we do these to improve the quality of search results, the goal is not to penalize sites, but rather to improve results. Then it would be strange to purposely leave the results bad for a week. Also, as you said, our hope is to neutralize the problem for links, example for links to ignore the bad links in our systems. So it's really going to be the case of fixing the issue, removing bad links that artificially affected the site, will result in a site staying in the same place in search, meaning they're still going to apply the devaluation. I could think though that this is something Matt used to do years ago, and he'd pick like one major site and boom, hit it, right? After they warned for months that they're going to do this new thing. And then as soon as everyone saw the big boom, they get in shape themselves, right? Oh, if they're going to take down BMW, well, they're going to take me down too. So it could kind of operate that way where you say, hey guys, we're looking at maybe devaluing your site. You've got 6 months to fix it. Because then the site improves itself, hopefully, and then doesn't suffer the devaluation. And then Google got what it wanted anyways, which is to have a better improved search. That's the only way I could see that would be truly helpful. What about you, Jim?
I don't think that Google should give warning. I think it should just do what it does. If it's going to apply a penalty, it should apply the penalty. But I think Google should give instruction. Google knows why it applied a penalty. Google knows what it was offended by. The number is associated with the website's dossier, and there's a dossier on every website in Google's index. If there's a problem, somehow it's expressed in that file.
Yeah.
So Google's got to operate in real time. If it's going to apply a penalty, it should just apply the penalty, and it should be heartless about it. But it should explain what happened and why.
Yeah, very much more specific instructions. Although I know they think that'll lead people to reverse engineer the algorithms. If you're doing a manual devaluation, that is not an algorithmic thing. So that is Google's reviewer deciding that this was a problem. And then you know how to directly address the fixes and the reconsideration request. So I agree with you. In manual actions, that should almost be a requirement just because people lose vast amounts of business. And you have to go to their documentation and just kind of try to figure out from that what they were looking at. And that can be very difficult.
Yeah. And again, if it would be difficult for Google or hard for Google to tell us why, I'd understand. But they know why. It's definitely associated with the file they keep on your website. If you're an organized person, you could dig up stuff from 10 years ago because you saved it. Google's an organized thing.
It is. And as people know, I've been in the business a long time, that you can go to Google sometimes and say, listen, we've done everything to try to get this site back. Is there an issue with it that came with the site? Like someone bought a domain that dropped. And Google can go in there, look at it, and come back and tell you, yes, there's an issue, or no, there's not an issue. So as you said, there is a way to review that. I totally agree with you.
Okay, so here's one that I definitely ought to agree with John on this one. Just because you call yourself something doesn't mean you're going to rank for it. You could call yourself number one great cheese. Doesn't mean you're the best cheese in America. It doesn't mean that you're going to rank for it. It just means that you called yourself number one great cheese.
Yeah.
It's such a basic thing.
Yes. No, it's totally true. On this question, though, and I don't know that it's in the article. I read the tweets associated. They were asking why their homepage wasn't showing up. And that is usually a sign of something for their domain name, just the words in their domain name. So John's answer definitely applies to everybody but that one particular situation.
Well, yes and no.
Why is your homepage not showing up? That's usually an indication that you have an issue with Google.
In this instance, a site owner writes to John on Blue Sky and says 4 months ago they switched from the domain name betterhalf.ai to theweddingcompany.com.
Yeah.
And they're still not ranking for their new domain name, The Wedding Company.
Right. And you'd have to put that in quotes for the test I was talking about.
I'm curious if they're in there for theweddingcompany.com. And, you know, I could actually go look as I'm speaking. I'm not. too busy thinking of the next thing I'm going to say. But there could be a bunch of reasons. Maybe they did a migration. Better Half AI to weddingcompany.com. Maybe they screwed up the 301s.
Well,
the 4 months is a long time, though.
Yeah, that's really true. I'm talking specifically about if I put the wedding company in quotes and my domain doesn't show up. And I just checked, their domain does not show up. That's usually indicative of some other issue. I had a site that had this issue last year, or earlier this year.
I got theweddingcompany.com showing up. I got it number one under theweddingcompany.com.
In quotes?
Not quote, no quotes.
You put .com on there. You put .com in there?
I put .com in there. So the domain is showing up.
I just put the wedding company in quotes.
No, well, again, the domain is showing up. The domain is on Google. No question about it.
Right. I'm just saying that normally, even if it's very generic, John's saying it's because it's generic. It's probably why it's not showing up. If you put it in quotes and you put the words from your domain separate in there, it should come up, and it's not coming up. So that's just the thing I think that they're wondering about. So, but anyway, if your name is generic, super generic, and you're trying to use it to rank better, you have a lot of competition for that super generic name. So you may not want to do that. Basically, John's just there.
For what it's worth, though, their socials are coming up all over the place.
Well, that's...
I put the wedding company in quotation marks just to see what happened. And now I've got their socials coming up all over the place, but their website is not coming up.
Yeah, the website's there. Usually the homepage doesn't come up at all. It's something else other than your generic name. So, where are you going to next, Jim?
I'm not sure exactly. We're definitely over time, but I'm not sure where to go next. Storefront required for minimum age products at Google Business Profiles. So if you're selling something that has a minimum age attached to it, like maybe a Playboy magazine, you need to have what, a storefront?
Yeah, that's kind of what they're saying.
Okay, so if you are selling a business or a product that requires a customer to be of a certain minimum age, you need to have a storefront or you will not get a Google Business Profile.
Yeah, like alcohol, cannabis, or weapons, and aren't permitted as service areas. You cannot get a service area business in Google Business without a storefront. And this is new. This is not old. So I guess that makes a lot of sense, because if you're cannabis, you have, I don't even know, have you been able to advertise? I know for a long time you couldn't.
I'm not sure on state laws. I know there are websites out there that specifically, you know, list legal cannabis dispensaries and stuff. But
No,
but yeah,
product.
I'm sure every jurisdiction has something different on that one.
Yeah, but I think Google refused to list, or maybe in ads you couldn't do it. But so some businesses like auto repair shops that have garage repairs and offer roadside service or hybrid service businesses, they can show their storefront address and designate a service area. So that's how it normally works for a service area, but is area business cannot speak. Apparently with these others, you have to have a storefront before they'll even consider listing you for a service-wide business, service area business.
Okay, we're almost through the list. We have this
we are.
A very, very long
cool.
Show.
This next one's kind of cool. Yeah, we're pretty close to the end here. Google is showing you animations on how to do math. And how the math is done, which is kind of cool. So if their example is 42 times 12, and they show you how to, now I think you're allowed to pick which type of math you usually use, Common Core or regular. I'm just calling it regular because I don't know the other name for it. But it actually will show you step by step how to do the calculations. So I think that's pretty cool. I don't know why it's a thing in Google, but it's pretty cool.
For what it's worth, the math that you and I grew up learning was called the new math.
Oh,
Common
thank you.
Core
I forgot the
is
name.
Not the new math. Common Core is what is new to the new math.
Exactly. And it's going to be done completely different. You know, remember the multiple, divide, add, subtract, MEDIS?
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it that way anymore. And if we do it the way we did it, we get the wrong result.
No, the not entirely. Not entirely. The results are going to come out. It's math. You come to a common conclusion. You just get there a slightly
Remember,
different way.
The order, the way you do the order.
I know about math.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just thought that was interesting. So some quick stories, mostly about Google search. Google tests underlying title, link, and domain on hover and search results. So currently, you just get it on the hover of the title, which is, you know, the thing you see in the search results.
The highlighted link. Yeah.
Yeah, but now they do it for the everything above that with the icon and the name of the company. So
well, that's good. I mean, that at least helps the user know where their mouse is on the page, and if your mouse is over it, if the user's mouse is over it, your listing looks a little more prominent. That's also kind of like a rising tide floats all boats sort of thing, too, right?
How so?
Well, I mean, they can scroll over anybody's listing and get the same result. There's no special benefit for any individual SEO. You can't. This is gonna be something that offers benefit to everybody who's highlighted or featured on the SERP page.
True, very true. And then next we have a Google Business Profile. Apparently, we're reporting on food order metrics, how your food was being ordered and the performance of that food, and that has gone away. They will no longer be courted by Google Business Profile. You'll still be able to place food orders from your business and search a map, so you just won't get any data on that.
That's really kind of too bad.
Yeah, that seems like really important data to give to business owners.
I can't imagine how useful that data would be, and how frustrating it would be to have that data and then suddenly not have it.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of an odd removal, I believe.
I remember when they took keywords away and I was pissed, but this would make me even madder as a business owner.
I know where I was when that happened. I was in Germany at the Oktoberfest on the street talking to somebody. They added them for website clicks, bookings, products, and food orders, and they took food orders out. So I think the others are still okay. But yeah, it seems an odd thing to remove.
Okay, they also took away the search box and site links. It's gone.
Honestly, how often did you use that?
I don't know if I ever did, but it was there. Yeah. And I always figured that would let me do an in-domain search without having to, like, you know, type domain colon. So I'm like, okay, cool. That's good. But no, I can't say I ever actually used it.
No, I never used it either. There are things that Google takes away where they're like, just too few people use it. But like, yeah, but entire industries needed it, like the cache. You know, security people use that cache too, right? But I don't think a lot of people are actually using the site links box. So I don't think many will miss it. Google now has a shopping card meaning in the search results an area of the page. Because when I read shopping card, I'm like, what? They're doing credit cards now? and they're changing some of their format again. And they're changing it to read where to buy instead of popular stores now. It's going to have a section of where to buy this product.
That's very
that can
cool.
be helpful. Yeah, that can be helpful.
Okay. Here's one that I think could be helpful in the right circumstances and could be like just downright confusing in others. So Google's testing a view all button in search results. This is probably got something to do with e-com. So next to your search result, if the landing page from the search result is a shopping category page, Google will click a view all button on the side of the snippet. You click it, it takes you to that category landing page on the e-commerce site. So not only do you get to see the blue widget, you get to see the pink widgets, the yellow widgets, the green widgets, and the red widgets as well.
Yeah, and the example shown in the article is using an internal site search. It shows like at the bottom of the page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then it just says view all. So you just see a view all link. I guess that could be helpful.
In some cases, it could be really helpful. In some cases, I think it could be very confusing because if I got a specific product showing up, chances are I did a more nuanced search to get that specific product.
Yeah, so people know it's showing in if we do product results, right? And it's the shopping section and it has the facet and navs on the left. On the right side of the listing, like the search result listing, it'll say view all. And then you can go to view all those items on that category page. So, these shopping pages, they're just so cluttered now. I just avoid them at all costs because I feel like there's just too much there. But if you use it, you might find that helpful.
Avoid shopping pages except for my clients, in which case you should shop as much as you possibly can and twice on Sundays if you don't mind.
Before we go, we have to mention Audience Key, our original sponsor. It's an excellent product that helps you manage your keyword mapping and also does on the edge fixes for Shopify, so you can put in like category and product pages that you can't do with Shopify naturally. So I just want to make sure we mention them. We did not mention them today.
We did not mention Audience Key this morning. Well, all love to Tom and the crew at Audience Key.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Okay, and while we're on the topic of gratitude, you know, we only have two more shows this year. Otherwise, our shows are going to fall on Christmas and New Year's, or the days after Christmas and New Year's Day. So, special thanks, and I hope Santa's really, really, really good to Darren and Brandy, and to Ricky, and to Brasco in the studio, and to everybody associated with WebmasterRadio.fm, and to the fans. Thank you all for listening. It's the show ain't nothing without y'all listening and tuning in and stuff. We've gone full clock, Christine.
We have. I'll have to save our SEO debate for next time. Should we call
oh,
it?
Oh, should we rename it SEO or not? Yeah, that was going to be a fun conversation. I got so much to say on that.
The year. Maybe we should have a panel at the end of the year. Why don't we do that as our last show?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe. We have oh my God, a panel show. God damn. Okay. We got some special interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks. We have,
Amir
from CTO of Duda. We just interviewed him earlier today. We're going to get a special interview up on, devermar.fm and hopefully distribute that out on the distribution networks. And, we have some more coming up early in the new year. Friends, you've been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm, recorded live to podcast on the 6th of December, 2024. On behalf of Christine Schachinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Be good to each other, be kind to each other, rank well, and Christine and I will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.